Hi everyone, this is Frida Rebo, and this is my podcast. Hello, I'm so excited. Here we are, second episode. I just want to start off by saying thank you so much to everyone that listened to the first one, and I am so blown away by all the positive comments and direct messages I've gotten. And thank you so much to everyone that shared and tagged me in, you know, all the social media platforms. It means the world to me. Thank you again so much. Okay, so here we are again in our second episode, and I am coming off of a week of just craziness. I've lost a horse friend. He was really, really old, and his name was Flash. He was a fantastic horse, and he was such a good friend to his horse brothers. And he was 34 years old, and he was just, you know, he stayed strong until the end, but one morning he just couldn't get up anymore. And I'm going to dedicate this episode to him. So this is for you, Flash. This is in your memory. So how do I begin training with horses? Well, my step one, yes, is always to go through the trauma and try to figure out, what are we working with here? Because no horse really comes to me in training if there's nothing going on, so to speak. I'm not a regular dressage or jump trainer, or not many just regular young horses come to me for training. I mean, it does happen, but it's rare. It's not really what I'm specialized in. So the first thing that I'd like to do when they come in is to figure out, is this a mental issue or is this a physical issue? Because, you know, a lot of owners, and I hear this so often, they'll say, well, my horse used to want to do it, now he doesn't want to do it anymore. My horse used to be like this, but now he or she is doing this. And, you know, this is not to say anything bad about anyone. I think we all just need to educate ourselves. And this is me included. Just a few years ago, I did not think this way at all. And I'm doing this topic today because I just want to, you know, spread some knowledge, and hopefully we can all just open our minds a little bit more to that, you know, maybe the horse is not just a bitch. Maybe she's just actually in pain. Maybe she's trying to say something. I talked about this specific topic last summer when I was invited to speak at the summit, which was a clinic where a lot of us horse people got together, and a lot of different speakers were there, and I was one of them. My topic was called, "No, she's not just a bitch, she's trying to tell you something." And that is really true. You know, most of the horses, I will say, you know, maybe 90%, there is something physically going on. And that physical issue can lead to a mental issue also, because if you are in pain, you're constantly trying to communicate that. You're constantly trying to do your best, but then you're not being heard when you're saying, hey, this is bothering me. Then yeah, then that will affect you mentally. I mean, that goes for us people too. So I think we just need to look at ourselves, how it would be for us when we were in certain situations and we were in physical pain, or, you know, even if we were hurting mentally, we can't perform on our highest level. We can't be exactly the people that we are, so, or who we want to be. So I just want to go through today some of my experience with horses that I've had, which has been you know, back and forth with different veterinarians and back and forth with myself and owners. So I want to give some of those examples of situations that I figured out, not just on my own, but as a big team is always a group effort. And then I also want to go through a list of things that are very important, in my opinion, to go over when you come up with an issue with your horse. You're like, okay, so my horse no longer wants to canter, for example, or my horse is losing weight. You know, there's a lot of different situations, but I'm just going to run down a list where the most common things that I would go to first looking for answers. Okay, let's start the list. And my number one thing that I would say is like, is your horse sound? And, you know, so soundness, sure. What is soundness? I think that some people do ride their horses even when they do have a little limp or, and you know, their horse wants to get out anyway. And that's fine. That's everyone's, you know, that's between you and your horse. And I do know some old horses that really, really want to get out on the trail, even if they are a little lame. And, you know, so good for them. But I think it's really important that we make sure that if we have a horse that doesn't really want to go forward anymore, or that doesn't really want to head out on the trail, or, you know, have a hard time going to the right or to the left, things like that, that you do a lameness exam, that you're just going to make sure that there's nothing wrong with the legs. You also go over, you know, the back area, and maybe there's something in the back that's bothering your horse. Because sometimes a back issue can look like a lameness and vice versa. So that goes hand in hand is hoof care. There is a lot of different things when it comes to hooves, and it is such a big, enormous topic that all I will say is that, in my opinion, I think that some horses are just not meant to be barefoot, and that gotta be okay. And then we have to help them to provide them with some type of shoe, you know, especially a lot of thoroughbreds, they're bred to run really, really fast, and their feet, that's what they're bred for. They're not bred for, you know, walking on the trail barefoot for hours on end, like, for example, a Mustang. And I think that if your horse then is sore-footed, doesn't really want to go forward, I think that we should help them. And even if you don't believe in shoes, then there's a lot of other options that you can do. You can live on softer surface. You can wear, you know, a boot that you take on and off when you ride your horse, etc. But that is super important, and that you are looking out for abscesses, which is basically like a bruise in the horse's hoof. That can make them not want to go, and that can make someone extremely uncomfortable. Also, when it comes to hoof, stuff like thrush or any type of fungus in the foot, like they can have different types of cracks, there's white line, there's a lot of different things that can leave the horses uncomfortable, and, you know, and lameness can be a result of that. So really look into that and make sure that you have a farrier that you trust, and that also maybe that your vet and your farrier works together. That's always been a winning concept for me. So, your tack. If you do ride your horse with tack, saddle, bridle, if you choose to have a bit, if you choose to have a hackamore, either way, please make sure that the tack is not just comfortable for you. That the saddle is not just something that you feel super comfortable sitting in. It's also important that it sits right on the horse so that it's not creating extra pressure anywhere, or that is rubbing them, something like that. And there's professionals out there that can help with that as well. There's saddles, fitters, and, you know, many, many different people that you can ask. There's special staff in the tack stores where you buy saddles that know what they're talking about. So, you know, if you're having some back issues with your horse, really make sure that you look into your tack. So, on the note of tack, so if you're going to ride with a bit, even a hackamore, anything around the horse's head, if you're planning to do that, then please also make sure that a veterinarian have looked at your horse's teeth so that there's nothing in there that's either putting pressure from the jacama from the outside from a sharp edge on the tooth, or if there's a bit that's getting caught on some hooks or something like that in the mouth. And not only if you're going to ride, you need to check your horse's teeth. It's also, you know, I do every other year. Some do every year. Some do every 4 years. But, you know, to provide your horse with some type of oral care, like dental care. Because in my experience, all my horses have done better. All of them. No exceptions. And my old horses, we've been able to pull out loose teeth, prevent infection, make them comfortable so that they can eat more. I've had horses had their tongues have huge wounds on them because they've had a sharp tooth. So every time they're trying to eat, they bite, they bite a big bite off of their tongue. And like things like that, super important. Please look in your horse's mouth. There's different ways of floating teeth. There's different ways to go about it. There is, veterinarians that could do it. I know there's some holistic people. I know that there is even some farriers that does it. So whatever you're comfortable with, just make sure that every now and then you take a look in there. Not just on the front teeth, but in the back teeth as well. Because, you know, if we want our horses to live for a really long time, to make sure that they have teeth so they can eat is such an important thing to remember. So that I always check off my list. Then when your horse loses all his teeth, don't worry, then they can eat pellet mixed with water and they'll be perfectly fine as well. Next on my list is, did you worm your horse? Because no matter what you believe in, and you might want to keep it really natural and you might use different herbs and you might deworm at different times of the year. Each his own, but I do want to recommend worming. It is horrible to see horses that do have worms, and it can lead to many different health complications. It can lead to colics or anemia. It can make them tired. And I mean, no one wants to have worms. let's just all agree on that. So when we're on the topic of worms and stomach, huge part of my job is to manage horses' stress level. And when it comes to ulcers is just one of those things that some horse that might look like it's living its best life, it has no stress, it has all the food it needs, it has friends, it has all those things, they can still have an ulcer. And I mean, I am not a veterinarian and I'm not going to go into the medical part of it, but having an ulcer in your stomach is painful and it can lead to many different complications. And it's hard to ask a horse to perform for riding or for really anything if they are uncomfortable in their stomach all the time and when it hurts to eat. And there are things that we can do to treat these ulcers, and there are different ways that we can provide our horses with different living situations if that would help to clear up the situation, if medicine is not something that helps right away. You can, combine medicine and environment. Something that you might not think about, because it's pretty seasonal, is skin. Is your horse really sensitive? Does it have a sensitive skin? Does your girth rub or any of your other tack rub? Are you having problems brushing your horse because it's, has really thin skin? Doesn't like all your brushes and just really, really like soft touch. That's really common in my opinion. And also in the summer, are they sensitive to flies? Do they get rashes? Or are they having hives? Are they swishing their tails a lot when you're riding? Are they bothered by the flies? Just to make sure that you try to help your horse, not be eaten alive by bugs. I will say from all horses all over the world, that is highly appreciated. Also, your horse's vision and hearing is something that I usually, I'll just have the vet go over the eyes and just make sure that they have a clear vision, because sometimes when you're in training, and I mean, like, yes, it's pretty rare to meet a horse that that's blind on one eye or blind on both eyes. That I've never met. But I have a horse, and I've had another one with one eye, and it's just important then to try to adapt your training. And if you have a horse that doesn't see so well, that maybe is older, that you think about that, and maybe that you don't come on as fast, and that you're giving a heads up, and maybe you're using more vocal cues. And I feel this next topic will probably be an entire podcast episode, but it's hunger. Is your horse hungry? Is it struggling? If it might only get fed twice a day. For some horses, yeah, it works fine for them. I'm not going to say that it doesn't. My horses get fed 3 times a day. I would like them to have a non-stop feeding schedule like in the wild where they're constantly grazing. But, you know, in Southern California, that's not really doable. So I always try to think about, is my horse hungry? Is my horse's needs met? Because it is, I mean, we could just relate to ourselves, extremely difficult to concentrate or do anything when we're hungry or focusing on food because we don't know when our next meal is going to come. Common problem that I have learned and come to realize is not a problem is that my horses get attached to each other. They love each other. And some horses do this more than others. And just like get so attached to their friend. And it's like, if my friend is not here, I can't do anything with you and I don't trust you. And all I want to do is to be with my horse friend. And I understand that. I'm there for 2 hours a day and they're with their horse friend 22 hours a day. And yeah, they live in herds. So they do really, really love their friends. And some horses are a lot more confident and they go with humans a lot easier than other horses. And I think then if you have a horse that you've had by itself or it hasn't really had horse friends in that way, maybe they've lived in box stalls, maybe they've lived in different situations, and then you all of a sudden put your horse in a new surrounding where it does have horse friends, and then your horse doesn't reject you, that's the wrong word, but it's like more off doing its own thing, it's not as engaged with you, then just take a breath, take a step back, and just be like, well, these horses are here constantly, I'm not, my horse is a horse, and of course my horse wants to have horse friends, and you just have to maybe, you know, learn to work around that. Ask the owner of your horse's new friend, can we hand walk together? Can we ride together? And, you know, take baby steps. Leave the friend for a few minutes and longer and longer, and they learn that they always get to go back to their friend. And I always like to think that when the horse trusts me and is comfortable with me, the horse will go with me. And because I'm also the horse's friend, but it takes some time. And you have to build a relationship. Last thing on the list today, what I want to mention is that when you've gone over all these things, well, let me rephrase myself. Maybe this is something you should do first. Yeah, I'm going to take that back. Do this first. You should look at yourself first. Where are you mentally? How are you feeling? What's happening in your life right now? Who are you? Where are you? And check your attitude. Just do a moral inventory of yourself and just like in a mood inventory of yourself and just be like, where am I at when I'm with my horse? Am I fully honest? Am I into this? Am I doing this training because I really want it? Why are we doing this training? You know, just really be honest with yourself. And if you're riding and you're like, oh, have to exercise my horse and da, 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 and I don't feel great about it, then don't do it. Do some other exercise. Come up with something else where you mentally are there, where you and your horse are like doing it together and it's a positive experience. Because if you're not positive, if you're not having fun, trust me, your horse is not having fun either. I am now going to give a few examples, and this is just a few horses that I've worked with over the last 3-4 years that I have had a kind of like a hard time figuring out what's going on, because they started out one way, then something changed, and I needed to figure out what was going on. The first example is a very young horse named Stevie. She was a Mustang, and when she first came, she was like so lively, she had so much going on, and she was just like any other baby horse, you know. And then she would kind of calm down, and she didn't want to canter around as much, and I just couldn't really figure it out. We had dewormed, we had done a lot of different things, but then I was like, let's do a blood panel and see that everything is right, because I kind of had a feeling that something was off since she had slowed down so much. And yeah, so she showed actually on her blood work that she was anemic. And one thing that could lead to anemia is worms. And we did a stool sample and we were right. It was worms. And then we gave a lot stronger wormer and out they came. Maya is a really large horse, and at this point when we were working on riding and doing work in general, not only riding but a lot of liberty stuff too, you know, she would act out when I asked her to go faster than walk. Walk, she was like, I am 100% into it. She was working so hard, and she was just like really showing up for the work. She really, really seemed like she had a good time. And then whenever I would ask her to trot, she would like act up, like she'd stand up, she'd kick, or she'd just get kind of anxious. And I kept pushing slowly to kind of see if I could get her to get stronger, if I could get her to be more comfortable. But I couldn't, but she could walk on a long rein, and we could go on the trail, and we could do all these things as long as we did walk. And then a vet said, well, no, I think she just needs some real training. And I was like, well, yeah, sure. I might not be like the best trainer, but I do know this horse, and I do know that she tries so hard to do really well in walk. And then when I ask her to do anything else, I feel like that's when we're having the issue. So long story short, we actually did decide to scope her for ulcers to see if there was something in her stomach. There wasn't. Then on their way out, we would just, let's just check the airwaves. And there it was in her airways, in the beginning of the throat, where the, like basically where the lungs open, where the air goes down, is like curtains, like at a movie theater. And every time you take a deep breath in, they should move to the side, the curtains. And on hers, only one did. So basically, she gets half the air in. So when I'm asking her to trot with me on and her head is down, I'm basically cutting her air supply. And that's why she panicked. So you can have a horse that really, really, really is saying, hey, I cannot breathe. And what if I would have just like gotten harsh with her and really pushed her to go forward even more? I mean, I think we could have gotten into some real dangerous territory, because she really needed to breathe, obviously. So I'm just saying, if your horse is having a hard time with moving forward and being really tired, please do your due diligence and really look into, are they getting enough oxygen? Are they getting enough? Can your horse breathe? McDaddy was a horse that was trained, and I was really just supposed to exercise him. And it wasn't, you know, he didn't come to me in training for a problematic behavior in general. It was just like, please exercise him. He needs to find a new home and see what you can do. And I would ride him day one, day two, day three was fine. Come around day 4 or 5, he would like tell me that he wanted to stand up. And he would be be like, no, I don't want to go forward. No, I don't want to do this. And I was like, okay, so maybe he's having an off day. I would rest him for a couple of days and then he would be great when we came back to work. I was like, okay, maybe he was just tired. We would work one day, one, two, three, and then we'd be back in the same scenario. And that's when I figured there's something going on physically that's showing up when he's been exercised for a few days. And we did a lameness exam. It didn't show anything. And then we did x-rays on his back and there it was. He had back problems. So he was totally fine to be ridden every now and then when he felt good. But then when he was put in actual work, his back would then act up. So, you know, back problems and even leg problems don't have to be a consistent thing. It can come when you reach a certain limit of work. And that's also really important to remember that, yeah, you can take your horse out a few times that have an issue, then the issue comes up. And that's when you just have to find the balance between what you want and what your horse can do. And like, you need to maybe meet in the middle. Maybe you ride sometimes when they have a good day. And hopefully you can work with maybe a chiropractor, a massage therapist, or your vet, medicine. There's so many different treatment options, but just make sure that you know that your horse is healthy if you're going to continue riding them. And then there's Marshall. Oh, Marsha, I call him. Marshall, if the Marshall matters, Eminem, because he has such an attitude. But he's just like the sweetest horse ever. You know, he doesn't have like a mean bone in his body. He's just like this enormous thoroughbred and he's just misunderstood and he just has a lot of opinions and he's just a little bit all over the place. But he's a very good communicator. He definitely will let me know if something's wrong. He came to me about a year ago. He's actually still with me. He's looking for a new home. And if you are out there that's looking for a really large, like 8-year-old thoroughbred that's just like fantastic and super funny and loves other horses, he's your guy. But I would ride and we would ride for a few days and everything would be great. He doesn't have any, you know, he didn't need any specific training. He just needed walk, trot, canter on the trail and in the arena, and he was looking for a new home. He was slightly underweight when he came to me, but that's went away fast. But then he would do this thing where he would slow down and then eventually he would just stop. And then one day when I got up on the mountain block, he would stop. He's like, I'm not going to move. I'm like, this is so strange because he wasn't lame when I let him run just in the arena free. So I couldn't really figure it out. I went through a couple of vets and then the last vet said, okay, well, let's block his front feet and let's do x-rays. And on the x-ray, we actually found that he didn't have enough heel. You couldn't really see it just by looking at it, but on the x-ray, it just wasn't enough heel to support his foot. We put shoes on the front and we put a 3-degree wedge pad in there, which is pretty dramatic. It's like 3 degrees is a large change in a pad. And I rested for 2 weeks. He got some pain meds. When he was then off the pain meds and the shoes had done its thing, because when you do a wedge pad that's high, you need to give the legs and the whole horse a few days to kind of acclimate to that new angle. When we did that, he was like a new horse. I got up and he just trotted off that mountain block. He was ready to go and it's just really done wonders. And so there I was with a horse thinking like there was some major issue and I was thinking maybe he needs to be retired. Maybe his racehorse career just like took a toll on his body. Maybe he doesn't even want me to ride him. Maybe he just wants to be left alone. But again, we found an issue that could be solved with $125 shoes every 8 weeks. And he's living a fabulous life. He's even in pasture and he has 2 guy friends and they're just running around even on hard surface. And we ride and it's awesome. now I know when I get on and he doesn't want to walk off the mountain block that something's bothering him. He's either then due for new shoes or, you know, sometimes he had a couple of abscesses in his back feet. And he told me before the farrier or I or even the vet could see the abscesses. But he told me that he didn't want to walk forward. And yeah, every time he's done it, there's been an abscess in the back foot. So he has definitely taught me to listen, that little Marshall. Solana is my personal horse. She's been my horse for 8 years and a couple months. We have had a really long go together. She's actually the horse that I've had the longest. She was my first horse in America. And we have just like this beautiful friendship where she is like the leader of my herd. And she always helps me with everything. And when we're going to load all of them, she always goes first. And when things are scary, she always goes first. And she's just kind of like my right hand little kid's rider. And when the kid is about to fall off, she always stops and she looks at me. And, you know, she always tries really hard to do a good job. And we go on the trail a lot. And we used to jump. And kids also took her to shows. And she would not buck with anyone but me. When I get on and I want to go fast, she bucks. And then the minute I'm about to fall off, she's like, no. Okay, I'll do less. She's just an awesome, awesome horse. But a couple years ago, I had her on the lunch line and I had a couple kids ride her, just like really little kids, 4 or 5 years old. And I would have them out on the lunch line and I was teaching them to balance and they held on to the bareback pad. She wanted to just go to the right. And then when I asked her to go to the left, she would want to turn around and go the other way again. I thought that was so strange because she's never really done that before. And then cantering also to the right, when I would ride her, she would kind of not really want to do it. And I thought it was so strange and I couldn't figure it out. Had the vet come out, she passed a lameness exam and everything. And a couple months later after that, when I just gave her some time off, on her back hock, there became almost like, you know, it looked like a big bug bite, just like a bite that was swollen and round. And I was like, I wonder what this is. Let's see if it gets bigger. And it did actually get bigger. And then I figured, I was like, shoot, has she gotten kicked? Is there like a little loose bone piece in here or something? Is this an abscess? Something's going to come out? Because sometimes it could be a bone piece and you don't have to do surgery. It could come out by itself. And it doesn't have to be that big of a deal. But the vet came out on site. They did an ultrasound and an x-ray. And it looked like two tiny little pieces of bone. And it did not want to come out because we gave it some time. And then I called our hospital here, our equine hospital. And I said, I think I need a quote. And I think I really need to take them out. It's just a feeling that I have. It started to get painful when you touched it. She still wouldn't be lame, but it was painful when you touched the actual site of it. And that doctor at the surgical center said, okay, we'll take her in. We'll open up and we'll take them out because obviously they're having a tough time. They're not coming out by themselves. During surgery, it actually turns out that the blister is full as an abscess. So there is like pus in there. And it turned out that it wasn't bone pieces, thank God. It was actually two pieces of gravel. And how those two tiny little pieces of gravel got in there, I have no idea. That has never seen it before. But they did some tests on the pus that came out, and it was actually a really bad infection in there. And it could have been very dangerous for her if we wouldn't have done the surgery. So I'm so happy that I listened to the vet and that I listened to my gut instinct to take them out. And she was in the hospital for several days and she needed to be on an IV and with two different antibiotics in the IV because the first one didn't knock the infection out. So, and then after that, she came home. She did a couple weeks in a stall, and she let all the, stitches heal. And no rehab needed after that. And she went back in the herd, and she hasn't had a problem since. She now goes both directions. No problem, and we have no issues on the lunch line. It's just two pieces of gravel. How in the world did they get in there? I have a feeling that they probably could have been in there for a really long time. Maybe she rolled. Maybe she got kicked years ago. I really don't know, because there was no wound. There was not even a scar. There was nothing. So anyway, yeah, look out for gravel, everyone. Monroe is a horse that has unfortunately passed on. She had a lot of cancer, as it turned out, and she died almost 2 years ago now. She, we did know that she did have some cancer, but we were told, like, oh, but she can exercise and she can live pretty normal life. And we did. I never rode her because it just felt wrong. And, you know, each his own, and each horse will tell you how they're feeling, but she just... she wasn't up for it. I could tell at the step stool she got very nervous, and when I got on, she didn't really want to walk forward, so we scratched it and we didn't do it, and she was in pasture and we did a lot of other fun things. But she had this thing that trimming her front feet, not any problems. Trimming her back feet, even picking her back feet, oh, it was so difficult. And the farrier one time picked up her back leg, and she got so upset that she kicked a hole in the wall. After that, I was like, okay, let's not do her back feet anymore. Something's wrong, because we shouldn't have this much problem doing her back feet and not her, like, not even a flinch when we did her front feet. After a while, she got really sick, and right before she passed on from her cancer, I found out in the ultrasound that all her organs were basically full of tumors. So, and her spleen and other organs were really enlarged. And it turned out that when you did pick up her back feet, it added so much pressure in her abdomen that it really, really hurt. And, I mean, we really don't know. We don't know what's going on inside their bodies if we don't look for a problem. And sometimes, honestly, even when you do look, you don't find anything. But I'm so glad that I gave her the benefit of a doubt, that it's like, no, it's not an issue. She doesn't just want to not pick up that back feet. She was actually in a lot of pain. And so if you do have a horse that are fine with the front feet, not the back feet, or you had a horse that was fine picking up all its feet and all of a sudden now it's not, I'm not saying that they have tumor in their bodies. Please don't think that. But I'm just saying they could be something medically wrong. So these were just some of the example horses that I've worked with that have had physical problems and we've had to find out. And I think that don't be scared. Don't think the worst just because you're having an issue with your horse. I just want to give information about that is like, go over the list, do your due diligence, talk to your vet, make sure your tack fits, make sure that you're on the right meds, make sure that your horse is not lame and you're still riding it. Just, you know, just go over everything. And you have to kind of be a detective and you have to just check everything. And hopefully then both you and your horse can have a really good time together and you can get to the bottom of what's wrong. Since the first episode, I've gotten some questions and I thought it'd be cool if we did like one or two questions in the end of each episode. And the first question that I got was, could you tell me a little bit more about working with wild horses? What is your approach? And I was thinking I'm going to do a whole episode on wild horses or on Mustangs specifically, and how I work with horses that has never been touched and had interaction with humans. Different from how I would work with a horse that has been damaged or has some type of trauma from humans, because it's actually a pretty big difference, and it's a pretty big difference in how the horses approach people, and that will just be interesting to share my view on all of that. I've also gotten a lot of questions about Rue, how she's doing, and how I went about her training. And that will also come further down the line in episodes when I will talk about some of the horses that have really changed who I am as a person. And I was also thinking that we'll do a whole episode on rescue owners. And I will talk to some different people that's adopted horses for me. And we'll talk about how is it to have a rescue horse, maybe compared to how it is to buy a horse that doesn't necessarily come with behavioral issues. Yes. Okay, here comes the question of the week. Do you, Frida, have moments of fear, and how do you deal with them? Yes. Yes, I have moments of fear. I'm terrified a lot of the time. I mean, it's not fun being with a horse that's aggressive and acting out. That's never fun. And of course, I'm only human. And of course, I feel fear when a horse is coming at me in 100 miles an hour. But I have, during all my years of experience, learned to stay calm no matter what. And when the horse is panicking, I can't do the same. I then have to get even more calm, because I have to send my calm energy, and I have to be a safe place for the horse to come to for comfort. So that's something that I've really worked on. And when a horse is aggressive, I really never want to show any of those feelings back. I don't want to show fear or any type of aggression back or reaction. I just try to stay as calm as possible. Because if you don't react back, the horse understands that it doesn't have to defend itself. And then in all my experience, they have backed off. But yes, of course, I am scared. It can be scary sometimes when you get on some of the horses for the first time and they're a little tense. But I've also really come to terms with that. If I get on one of my young horses or a horse that I'm riding for the first few times in training and I feel scared, that then we're not ready. That if we have done our groundwork so good and we actually really, really trust each other, I shouldn't feel anxious when I'm getting on, and I shouldn't really feel a hesitation from the horse either. And that's really important to remember, that if you are ready to ride, you shouldn't have those issues about the step stool or about when you're about to get on or even sitting on the horse, because the horse and you should be comfortable and trust each other at that point, if that makes sense. But yes, yes, I have moments of fear. Of course I do. So that was some of the questions for this week. And then, yeah, thank you all so much for listening again. I can't believe that people are coming back to listen to the second episode. And if this is your first time that you're listening, welcome. And yeah, I'm gonna keep these episodes coming, and interviews with other people will also come soon, so that you don't have to just sit and listen to my voice. Anyway, I hope that you're all staying safe out there and that you have a great week. Talk to you soon. Bye.